Maybe we could start with a question about how the clerk's tale emerged, the process by which you wrote the book, got it published. A lot of people here are thinking about issues like that and how you construct a first book and what sort of genesis it goes through. Uh-huh. So maybe you could talk about the history of the clerk's tale a little bit.
Sure. It feels very formal. I feel very, like, which doesn't fit, but anyway. And this is a great building, by the way. You have great old buildings here. In South Florida, we don't have anything like this. Everything's new, but we get the ocean. That book, it's like my whole life went into that book. I'm 42 years old now, and I first started thinking about writing poetry when I was in high school in Minneapolis at the Breck School, which David knows of. And I'd gone there for 13 years. I had a great English teacher there who is still my friend today. And she introduced me to Chaucer and the Canterbury Tales and she and Sylvia Plath and Shakespeare. And I took that AP English class when I was a senior. There were 10 people in it. And I just really fell in love with poetry and her love of poetry too was very inspiring. I guess that's how it kind of started. And then I went away to college and I wrote for the literary magazine there and took all the literature class. I majored in English. And then I went to graduate school in England at the University of York and studied 17th century poets, George Herbert and John Donne. And then I came back to the States and I went to the Harvard Divinity School and I decided that I was going to become a hospital chaplain. I wanted to be like George Herbert and John Donne only 300 years later. I would be a minister and I would, you know, love poetry, read poetry, or maybe write poetry. About halfway through that program, I realized I was too young to become a hospital chaplain. That, not that it was a mistake, although I did feel like that for years afterwards, that I'd made a mistake. But I got my degree, and it was during that time frame, though, that I began writing a book, this book. So I was 25 years old then, when I began putting things into a book form and began sending to a magazine. I had been sending to magazines since I was in college and being rejected and rejected and rejected and rejected and rejected. And the book is dedicated to Darrell Hawthorne, who was like a mentor for me. I met him when I was at the Divinity School. He wasn't at the Divinity School. He was retired. He'd gone to Harvard. He became a mentor, a father figure for me, and he believed that I could write a book. He was the only person I talked to about it. He was not a poet. He didn't like reading poetry, but he believed in me. That was a very crucial encounter. We remained friends for the next 15 years, although I was only to see him one more time in person. We maintained the friendship through phone calls. It was like a intense psychotherapy or something, although he wasn't a psychotherapist either. But, you know, I needed the help of therapists and support groups, and I had met him at one of these support groups. So we became very close. And then, so I started sending this book out when, starting in 1990, I began sending to all the first book contests. I didn't know anybody in the poetry world. I began to think you had to have some kind of connection or know somebody, or I've gone to a writer's graduate program, and I didn't have any connection to anything. although I was daunted by that, I started sending it out to the Whitman Prize, to the Yale Younger Poets Prize, to the AWP had a prize. I had a calendar of when I would send everything out. I send it out to 10 or 12 places every single year. I did it religiously, as well as sending to magazines, and began getting rejected from these. Early on, I was finalized for the Walt Whitman Award when Robert Pinsky was the judge. Just a little note, and then I heard nothing else. And I kept sending it out. I moved back to Minnesota to be with my family. And my family, at that time, I had grown up relatively affluent, and my family, unbeknownst to me, was beginning to fall apart and was beginning to go into bankruptcy. And so I was faced with a lot of challenges and difficulties there. And I had to find a job. I had my education, but I didn't have a job really. So there were several rude awakenings awaiting me upon my return that happened gradually. The first thing that happened was the family house that I'd grown up in was sold, and my parents moved to Oklahoma City. And then I moved to a farmhouse that they owned at that time in the country. And there I wrote I began writing a lot with that book. I was all alone on a farm, 100 acres in southern Minnesota. I began working for my father, who was a doctor who had medical newsletters. So I began to be an editor of medical newsletters and doing book reviews, all kinds of medical topics, from everything, right to die, Alzheimer's, HMOs, PPOs, PHOs, all that stuff. I didn't know anything about it, but I thought, well, you know, this must be God's will for me. So I began to do that. I did that for about 4 years until that fell apart. And I lived in rural southern Minnesota, and I loved it. I had every intention of living the rest of my life alone on a farm in rural southern Minnesota, all by myself. I was perfectly happy to live my life that way. And I wrote a lot of this. I began to write a lot. There's a poem in that book, Autumn Song, which goes right back to that time and remained sort of unchanged throughout all the revisions. I wrote that early on. And the genesis of a lot of those poems happened early on. That Cape Cod poem I read last night, I worked on for 17 years, I think, from the time I began it. And I was working on it right up until we sent it into Houghton Mifflin. Some of them were written a little quicker. That one was a long time. The Ghazals one was a long time. The little bestiary poems go back to the farm, but then I rewrote them right at the end before publication a little bit with Louise Glick's help. The last poem in the book is kind of a dream memory love poem that takes place at the farm. So then I guess my life is intertwined with this book so much it's hard to describe it without telling you my life story. I kept sending it out. I kept getting rejected. My friend back in Cambridge, Massachusetts, kept encouraging me and saying to me that I could do this. And I didn't talk to that many other people about it. I talked to some, of course, but I basically thought people were not that interested. And I think, by and large, people are not that interested. I didn't, you know, my working relationships, people were not really that interested in poetry, or so I assumed. Then my family fell apart further. The alcoholism in the family was out of control, and I had an intervention. It didn't work. The farm was sold out from under me. I was disowned. I went into a mental hospital. I had a complete break. Couldn't believe this was happening, although I sort of, you know, from early development, there had always been an emotional infidelity, a disconnect brought on by that illness, I think. So that changed the course of my life. And I met in the hospital, I met a nurse and her husband. And after I left the hospital, I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know where I was going to go. I was now out of a job. I was now in the attorney's offices fighting for my unemployment benefits. My parents were suing me for embezzlements of funds from the business account, which was not true, and I had to go to court with that. And I had to sort of pick, start all over again, and I had no money. And so the nurse said that I could, she said, well, this is highly unusual, but you can come and live. If you have no place to go, you can come and live with me. Here's my phone number, if in case you should need it. I said, okay, great. So I went back to the farm, and we fought and we fought and we fought. And then I left. I couldn't fight anymore. And I felt myself going downhill again. So I left, and really have been without my biological family since then. So I was like 20, 28, 29 at that time. I kept sending the book out. It was like my whole life. It sort of kept me together. So the story gets better. Then I lived with the nurse and her husband, and there's poems in there about them. One about her husband called Ponies that I wrote. So I went on a picnic with them. He's since passed away, but he also believed in me and believed that I could write this book. So I had these people in my life that believed in me. I also met a poet named James Merrill through friends, and I began writing him. So I had sent him parts of the book, and it was really juvenilia and early on and not very good. He came to visit me at the farm. I didn't know he had AIDS. He didn't tell anybody he had AIDS until after he died, that came out. So I didn't, it was so kind of heroic in a way. I mean, he was this great poet, and I guess he just felt that it would, I don't know, that was his choice. So he was already ailing at that time, but I didn't know that. Anyway, he said, you know, it might be wise to take a little more time before you publish this book. It had a different title and different everything. And then he died. So that was my connection to the, you know, I thought, oh, I got this great connection. You know, I can win the Yale Young Poets Prize. Just, you know, put in a good word for me or something will happen. Well, it never happened because he died. So I kept sending the book out. I kept rewriting the book. I lived with the nurse and her husband for 3 years. I did not work for 3 years. I was grieving. I didn't really know what grief was until that point, but I really was grieving for the next almost 3 years. I think it was 2.5. And lived in half of a living room there in their house, and brought one little cat with me from the farm. I gave away my dog. Gave away my lot, sold all my books, sold everything I owned, and left there. Now I was in Northfield. That's where the nurse lived. There were two colleges there. So I was surrounded by kind of academic types and, you know, talked to them about poetry and things like that. But still, to boldly mention that I had this book I was sending out was not right on the tip of my tongue because, you know, who cares? I guess I felt. Across the street from me was a woman named Claire Rossini, who's written a book. So I was meeting people, and she was great, and her husband Joe Byrne, he's a painter, and they had a little son named Francis, and then they moved away. They live out in the East Coast now, but at that point they lived across the street from me, and she wrote a great book called, oh God, what's the name of that book?
Winter Morning with Crow.
That's right. She has these great poems in there. You know those Claire poems where she gets a character and sort of novelistic in a way. And this character who's a college student has all these experiences. I really love those poems. I encourage you to read them. And also some very moving poems about a baby that was born dead. And those are beautiful. So that happened to Claire, and then she went to Bush Grant, and I'm seeing all these things happen across the street. What about me? I don't know. I kept. Carleton had a computer lab at that time, and I was still young enough looking so I could pass as a student. So I'd go in there and I would write the book on their computers because I didn't have a computer. I liked the way everything looked on that type. So every year, 10 contests. What are the other ones? I sent them to the Four Way Books Contest, the Tupelo Press Prize, the Bakeless Prize, every single one of them. I learned about them through poets and writers. They have a listing of them and when the deadlines are and who to send them to and how much money they are. So I followed that religiously. So after this grieving period, my friend in Cambridge said, I think it's time to get a job. And I said, okay. And I was trying to get all these jobs, you know, working in the radio station. I was doing a lot of reviewing for the radio, public radio there at St. Olaf College, and doing book reviews on the air and doing a lot of radio work. I liked that, so I thought, oh, I'll get a job doing that. I never got a job doing that. I could never get a, you know, regular job with benefits and a 401k. I could never get in. And I worked for the newspaper and I did theater reviews for them for a while. That didn't turn into a job. I tried to get a job with, you know, my religious background, counseling priests. I didn't get that job. And I tried to get a job teaching high school. Didn't get that job. Well, I didn't get that job because I was still kind of fragile at that point. And I went into the interview, and halfway through the interview, I began reciting this poem by Elizabeth Bishop, and then I started sobbing, you know, so it's like, you know, clear I wasn't going to get, you know, how's it going to handle the football team in English class? So I thought, okay, that's not meant to be. The manager for Brooks Brothers lived in Northfield, worked at the Mall of America, and I had won during that time. I did have some encouragement. I won the Minnesota State Arts Board grant for $6,000. I stretched the $6,000 over 2 years, but by the end of 2 years, I didn't have anything left. I spent a lot of my days in this copy shop. I befriended these people that ran this Xerox store, and I lived in there for this grieving period or whatever. I was doing stuff for the radio, and I was beginning to come back to life slowly. But I needed a regular job. So I went to Brooks Brothers and I interviewed with them. Mary Beth was the manager at that time in the Mall of America, Minneapolis. She said, why do you want this job? You know, you've got this education, you know, what are you doing here? I said, well, none of these places that I want to get a job are hiring me, and I need a job, I need a paycheck, I got to put bread on the table, and I need it now. She said, okay. So I started, you know, within a week, I started there. I worked my ass off. I worked really, really hard. I was the number one salesman in that store. I worked double shifts, and I worked and I worked and I worked and worked. But I still, you know, was sending the book out. It was there that I met Ralph, who I wrote the title poem about 7 years later. You know, that it started then, 7 or 8 years later, whatever that is. Still getting rejected though, and not very many magazine publications either. But I did those religiously too. I would do them in batches of 10. I would send 3 poems in each. I would have a cover letter, and I'd send them out. I mean, I must have sent out thousands and thousands, and didn't get accepted that much. I did go to one writer's conference at Sewanee early on in 1990, met Donald Justice there. I don't think he would ever remember me. Well, he's passed away now. Great poet. Mona Van Dyne was there. She's passed away. It was a nice, it was a good experience. But my writer connections were not that great, or I mean, I wasn't that hooked in. I'd done some things with The Loft, which is a writer center in Minneapolis. I won a little prize through them, and I read with Galway Canal. That was early on. So I don't mean I want to paint an accurate picture. There were little blips. You know, there were things that were encouraging that were happening. It wasn't like nothing was happening, but I wanted more to happen faster or something. I wanted this mythical book, but it wasn't, the timing was not right yet.